Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an apparent return to the Cold War in the form of an arms control treaty signed by Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev in 1987 that the US suspects the Russians have cheated on. Darrell Kimball, the Executive Director of the Arms Control Association, joins us to look into concerns that the US briefed NATO allies on over Russian test flights of the R-500 ground-launched cruise missile that have been going on since 2008, complicating US diplomatic engagements with Russia on cooperating to end the war in Syria and bring Iran's nuclear program under international control. Then, with China's foreign ministry refusing to grant visas for New York Times and Bloomberg News reporters in China, we'll speak with journalist Paul Mooney, who has been based in Beijing since 1994, but in November his visa application was rejected by the Chinese government with no reason given. We'll discuss why the current leadership in China is trying to intimidate foreign journalists into towing the party line and the extent to which revelations about massive corruption among top Communist Party officials and their families by the New York Times and Bloomberg have reached the Chinese people and led to efforts to restrict the ability of foreign reporters to do their jobs. Then finally, we'll speak with Clyde Prestowitz, the former counselor to the Secretary of Commerce, who has an article at the Los Angeles Times, "The All-Too-Real Costs of Free Trade to Average Americans. The country is not better off when trade deal gains go only to the very rich." We'll discuss the apparent contradiction in President Obama's State of the Union address, where he decried the growing income and wealth disparity in America while calling for a free trade agreement, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that is likely to ship more jobs overseas in exchange for cheap imports that the unemployed will not have the means to purchase at Walmart. And joining us now is Darrell Kimball, who is Executive Director of the Arms Control Association. He was previously the Executive Director of the Coalition to Reduce Nuclear Dangers and the Director of Security Programs for Physicians for Social Responsibility. Welcome to Background Briefing, Darrell Kimball.
Good to be here.
And the U.S. has now briefed NATO on charges that Russia has been conducting test flights since 2008 of a ground-launched cruise missile that is in violation of the 1987 Intermediate Nuclear Treaty, the INF Treaty, which was one of the key arms control agreements of the Cold War era, which encompassed the Pershing, the cruise missiles, and the Soviet Union's SS-20. So I'm sort of doing a bit of a flashback myself since you were intimately involved in all of those pretty intense days to end the Cold War, and yet it seems to be coming back, at least in a very small way. So what's going on with Russia and with Putin's nuclear atavism?
Well, the report today is about questions that the United States has raised with Russia about missiles that are in development, that Russia has flight tested, that may have been tested in violation of certain elements of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, and that treaty bans missiles with ranges of 500 kilometers to 5,500. So these are short of the intercontinental ballistic missiles. They are these intermediate range missiles. The U.S. has asked Russia for clarification. Russia has apparently said that the missile flight testing is not a violation of the treaty. The details of the flight tests are not altogether clear in the public records. This issue will continue to be discussed between the U.S. and Russia. But I think, you know, this dispute obscures the larger problem which exists, which is that the United States and Russia, though they have significantly reduced their nuclear arsenal since the 80s, due to the INF Treaty, which eliminated all of these intermediate range missiles, and due to the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaties, the two sides still have, as we speak today, over 1,500 nuclear warheads that can be delivered against one another within just a few minutes. So the larger problem is that the two sides are not pursuing further reductions in those oversized stockpiles, which are far more than are necessary to deter a nuclear attack by the other. And specifically, President Putin is refusing the proposal from President Obama for further formal negotiations to reduce these excess Cold War systems. And so I think, you know, these missile flight tests that Russia has done that may be violations of the INF Treaty, you know, it's a sign that Russia is seeking to maintain this nuclear force that it still has. It is worried about new nuclear armed states on its borders, including China and India and Pakistan. And it may be interested in developing shorter-range nuclear-capable missiles to deal with those problems.
So is it possible that what's going on with Russia is that because their conventional forces have all but disappeared from certainly from the days of the Soviet Union, that they need an extra hedge with nuclear?
Well, that's part of the argument that you get from Russian officials and defense experts. You know, Russia has argued that they do not want to further cut their strategic nuclear arsenal until they can understand the end state for the U.S. ballistic missile defense program. They argue that that program could someday negate some of their nuclear retaliatory capability. Russia is also worried, as you said, about what they call the conventional force imbalance in Europe. The U.S. and NATO forces today are far larger and more capable than Russia's. Russia also says that they don't want to further cut their nuclear stockpile because of their concerns about security on their southern border with respect to China and India and Pakistan, which are increasing their stockpiles of nuclear weapons. So for all these reasons, Russia is saying yet to further nuclear arms reductions. And I think Russia also generally sees nuclear weapons as a source of prestige. So the Cold War may be over, but the tensions between Russia and some of its neighboring countries remains. And unfortunately, the devastating nuclear arsenals, while smaller, still do remain.
Again, I'm speaking with Darrell Kimball, who's the Executive Director of the Arms Control Association. He was previously the Executive Director of the Coalition to Reduce Nuclear Dangers and the Director of Security Programs for Physicians for Social Responsibility. So is that to say then that we, in effect, have the worst of both worlds? We have psychological disarmament, but not physical disarmament. In other words, we don't. The weapons are still there, then it may not be on a hair trigger, but because we no longer think that we're enemies like we were in the Cold War, that we don't realize that as long as you have the capability and the weapons exist, and we've been getting stories now about custodians of our right. nuclear missiles out there under the prairies who have all kinds of problems with cheating on tests and drinking and whatever, and they keep getting dismissed all the time. So there's a kind of surreal nature to this, isn't there?
Well, it is a little Strangelovian. You know, this week was the 50th anniversary of the release of the movie Dr. Strangelove, and you know, much of the thinking and many of the weapons from that era still remain. But, you know, honestly, the ideological competition and the threat of war that we had during the Cold War is gone. And I think that the overall threat of a nuclear conflict between the U.S. and Russia today is pretty close to zero. What's unfortunate is that the weapon systems that are capable of producing catastrophic destruction, not just in the U.S. and Russia, but across the world, if there were ever to be such an exchange, is still there, and there is still a great deal of inertia that is, especially in Russia, keeping leading Russian leaders to keep those weapons levels far too large. there has been recent progress. In 2010, the United States and Russia, President Obama, President Medvedev, agreed to the new Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, which brought down U.S. and Russian deployed strategic nuclear warhead levels to 1,550 on each side. And it put in place very stringent verification and monitoring provisions so that each side can make sure the other is making those reductions. But to date, the Russians have not agreed to Obama's overtures for further reductions. Just last summer, President Obama said that after an extensive review of the U.S. nuclear weapons strategy, that the Pentagon had determined that the United States could cut by another third, down to about 1,000, the number of deployed long-range nuclear weapons. But Russia says that they don't want to go in that direction, at least quite yet. And so we are sort of in a holding pattern right now. This existential nuclear threat still exists. And meanwhile, you know, there are some other countries, China and India in particular, that are beginning to pursue a nuclear arms race of their own. That if they don't find a way to slow the pace of their buildup, they're going to be in a much more dangerous nuclear arms competition. So this is an issue that we all need to still pay attention to, you know, vigilance and further action on verifiable nuclear arms reductions is still very much needed today.
Well, my understanding is that Pakistan has the fastest growing nuclear arsenal on the planet. I think they've surpassed France's arsenal, haven't they?
Well, Pakistan is producing a larger amount of fissile material. That's the nuclear material necessary to make nuclear weapons. Whether its arsenal is actually grown is not clear. There are some reports that claim that Pakistan could build an arsenal that exceeds France. France has about just under 300 nuclear warheads. And Pakistan's chief competitor, in their view, is India. India sees China as a rival. India is also increasing its stockpile. And China has a relatively smaller long-range arsenal of about 75 weapons, but it has a couple of hundred short-range nuclear-armed missiles. So we need to engage these other nuclear-armed states in verifiable nuclear arms control, and the United States and Russia need to make more progress in reducing their still bloated stockpiles, which, by the way, are extraordinarily expensive to maintain over time. The U.S. Right now plans to spend about $350 billion to maintain the current size nuclear force through the replacement of the ballistic missile submarines and a new strategic bomber.
So, again, Darrell Kimball is the Executive Director of the Arms Control Association. And I recall, of course, since this alleged violation of the 1987 INF Treaty, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, between Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev, of course, we all recall Ronald Reagan's famous adage, trust but verify. I thought there was fairly robust verification between these two countries now, Russia and the United States. So how did they get away with this, and how was it detected? I mean, do we have...
Well, there still is very thorough verification, and this was detected. That's why there's a dispute. If it wasn't detected, we wouldn't have known about it, and we wouldn't be reading about it in the New York Times. But, you know, technically, the INF Treaty on-site inspection regime ended in 2001, as the treaty called for. But both sides continue to provide information to the other side about their missile programs to make sure that they're not violating the INF Treaty. And each side uses national means of intelligence to continue to monitor the other side. So it is through the U.S. intelligence apparatus that the missile flight tests of Russia were detected that may not be compliant with the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. And with the new START treaty of 2010, there are regular on-site inspections as well as data exchanges that ensure that each side is complying with the agreement. So I think, you know, we need to put this in perspective and recognize that, you know, this is one dispute that exists about this old treaty. Russia has an obligation to show that it's meeting its obligations under the treaty. It would be very disturbing if Russia were cheating on the INF agreement. But the far larger issue is that Russia is not interested in right now further reductions in the far larger strategic nuclear arsenals that it has and the United States still has.
Well, obviously things have changed enormously since the end of the Cold War in terms of the hope for, you know, getting rid of nuclear weapons, not necessarily altogether, but reducing them substantially. And there was a period under Yeltsin when there seemed to be an awful lot of cooperation. And then once Putin's taken charge, he has clearly turned the clock back. And in many ways, he appears to be sees Russia as a very, not necessarily a part of Europe or the rest of the world, but its own kind of Eurasian power. And he's trying to reassert. I mean, first of all, he completely asserted total control over the country. And he has, of course, increased their defense budget, nothing compared to ours. But since he comes out of the KGB and since he appears to have that sort of mindset, I recall, for example, the Chemical and Biological Weapons Treaty that Nixon signed was violated for decades by the Soviets, who built an enormous capability of chemical and particularly biological weapons, which we were completely unaware of until the Soviet Union collapsed. So is there a problem there? Is this, since this man, Putin, has really cast such a shadow over Russia and changed its direction, at least in terms of its relationship to the United States, is it possible that his background and his makeup is a factor in this? And his absolute apparent control over Russia?
Well, there are a lot of problems in Russia today. The growing authoritarianism, the human rights problem that we're going to hear more about in the context of the Sochi Olympics. But, you know, through the long history of the Cold War and the post-Cold War period, you know, the United States and Russia have been uneasy partners in trying to reduce the mutual risk of mass annihilation. And so, you know, there has been a great deal of tension at times. There has been cooperation at other times. There has been a lot of success since the end of the Cold War in reducing the, you know, obscene numbers of nuclear warheads and bomber and missile systems. You have to remember that, you know, around the time that the Berlin Wall fell apart, you know, Russia and the United States had, you know, close to 20,000 nuclear weapons each. Today, those numbers are considerably lower. But, you know, as the old bumper stickers during the Cold War days said, it only takes one nuclear bomb to ruin your whole day. And each side still has, as I said, about 1,500 warheads that can be delivered within 30 minutes of a launch order. So there still are risks. We've made a lot of progress, but there still are risks. And we are in a phase right now where, you know, Putin's mentality, his view of Russia's place in the world and their own security concerns are making it much more difficult to reduce these nuclear risks in a straightforward fashion. So I think we need to keep working at it. For better or worse, we need to keep working at it with the Russians because, you know, they are the only other country with a nuclear arsenal that of that size that threatens, theoretically, the United States and others. So that's how I see it. We need to continue the long efforts to reduce these nuclear risks, and we're in a difficult period right now.
Well, Darrell Kimball, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Darrell Kimball, who is Executive Director of the Arms Control Association. He was previously the Executive Director of the Coalition to Reduce Nuclear Dangers and the Director of Security Programs for Physicians for Social Responsibility. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back talking with a reporter who has worked in China since 1994, but just had his visa pulled for no reason.